Hello and good day, everyone. This is Kevin Finkel here with another episode of Magic, the First Pioneers. On this podcast, we talk all about the Pioneer MTG format to keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I am joined today by my co-host as well as our guest from last week. So, if you want to introduce yourselves.
My name is Ryan Schwenk. I am the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo region of Japan. I'm in Yokohama. And our guest.
My name is Jonathan Medina, and I am in the Ohio region of the United States.
It's pretty good. All right, so last week we got to have the most fun ever and talk for almost 2 hours about the new set that just came out, which is Theros Beyond Death. And we didn't quite finish even in that time, so we wanted to go over the last couple of cards, and, you know, we're a week later now, the set's been... You know, it's out, been out on Arena for a few days now. We've had the pre-release cards, the full set spoiler for almost 2 weeks. It's starting to be interesting. You know, we're starting to see where this might affect the format, what we're going to see shaken up. So we're going to make some of our early impressions on how the new set is going to affect the format is what we'd like to do today.
And did you guys know that there is already MTGO results? Did you know that?
Yes. Yes, there are. We got a deck dump that had 5-0 results already. And we think it was a
preliminary?
Yeah, preliminary. There we go.
And we got a challenge as well today.
But here's the thing. We have there's a huge Hallelujah tournament in Japan this weekend. Probably going to be around 200 people or so. So it's a 1K basically for Pioneer. It's going to be like one of the first big tournaments.
Oh, that sounds cool.
So we'll get some great data. There always is good data from 1Ks, but also because it's Japan, hopefully we'll get some really good spice as well.
Yeah. Japanese brewers are always on the cutting edge.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so excited. So yes, we got stuff from the preliminaries, but that could be totally changed. Flipped on its head or whatever you say, by this weekend.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I think at this point we've started to see what cards might be strong in certain formats, and it's going to be a little bit on what shakes out in the meta. You know, if it turns out the meta has sped up or slowed down significantly, we may see different things become popular because of that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so today... Multicolor?
Yeah, let's finish up where we left off. So I was having some mic issues last week. I am back on, and we were going to go through some multicolor cards from the set. So, you know, this includes a lot of the mythics and some powerful cards, so definitely didn't want to skip over that. Just what we thought were some of the most powerful multicolor cards from the set, what might be impactful in existing homes in Pioneer, or potentially anything that could set for a new home.
So maybe our guest can go first. What's your first pick, Jonathan?
All right, so I don't know if I put any of these cards on there. I'm surprised that a certain card is not on this list, but I'll pick from the ones that we have.
So, you can go off list, that's fine.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that Euro was not on the list. I don't know why.
I think he, maybe scroll down here a little bit.
Is he
on the bottom.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. He's all right. Like there we go. I was like, wow, we were way off. I'm like, I feel like I want to put that on there because of the dredge deck. So I've been all about the dredgeless dredge deck in Pioneer. Not that it's the strongest deck, but it's one of my favorite kind of decks to play. And so when, you know, the spoiler came out, I was always looking for, oh, is there going to be new toys for dredgeless dredge? And the Euro... Titan of Nature's Wrath was one that that kind of stuck out to me. So this is a colorless, a green and a blue legendary creature, Elder Giant. It's a 6/6. And when Euro enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it escapes. Whenever Euro enters the battlefield or attacks, gain 3 life, draw a card, then you may put a land from your hand onto the battlefield.
So broke.
Yeah, and its escape cost is green, green, blue, blue. So
and 5 cards, yeah.
And 5 cards, yeah.
And 5 cards, yeah. You do have to exile 5 cards. or that would be pretty dumb. I mean, it already is pretty dumb. So when I saw this card, I was really excited for the Dredgeless Dredge deck, thinking, oh, well, maybe a copy or two can go in that deck, you know, because you're putting a lot of cards in your graveyard. It's like a natural fit. I used to run an Oko version of that deck, so it's not an Oko, obviously, but, you know, it's kind of fits that same kind of slot in the 3-mana slot, and, you know, staves off aggression and stuff like that. And I noticed that Sodek, who's like a dredge expert, was actually saying, hey, I'm going to put some of these in my Pioneer list. And I said, ooh, neat. So, like, I'm on the right track here, you know?
Nice. Interesting. So, and, of course, it does matter that casting them from the graveyard with that return cost will trigger your prized amalgams, which is an important thing for the deck. And it's difficult to get enough of those.
Right.
So I actually posted something on Twitter the other day. Where exactly will Yuro fit in? I mean, what does he help the most? Is he going to fit in Ramp? Is he going to fit in Dredge? I've seen people play him in Collected Company decks with, like, the ones that get rid of the ETB effects.
Hushbringer.
Like Hushbringer and stuff like that, just so you get a value 6/6, I guess. Like, where do you guys...
Well, so it still attacks and does those abilities, you know?
So my answer might be all of the above. You know, we are already seeing it in Ramp decks. We're seeing it in kind of combo-y decks almost. So my personal place where I think that the card is getting the most advantage taken of it is in the Kethys combo. So it, you know, it synergizes with being able to cast for cheaper. You want the life gain, the card draw, the ramp. It puts itself in a graveyard as a legendary card. You can recast it. You can turn into it with your Lazav. You can, you know, bring it back with all kinds of things. So, like, you've always got the cards in the graveyard to bring it back. So, like, it just seems to synergize with every part of what that deck's already doing. For me, that's the biggest place that I'm like, oh, man, this card is insane in that deck.
You're, like, the only person that I continuously hear talk about Kethys combo. So
it's pushing probably it, a pet deck. There's, like, it really one hard, in every group who loves the Kethys combo.
Yeah. No, it sounds really strong in that deck, though, seriously. All right, Kevin, you want to go next?
Yeah, well, if we're going to keep talking, I figure I should talk about the other Titan that we got, because we somehow didn't get a white one. We got Kroxa, Titan of Death's Hunger, is a red-black Titan, just for red-black. Also a 6/6 Elder Giant Legendary Creature that sacrifices when it enters, or, and you can recast it for 2 black, 2 red, 5 other cards. But this one, when it enters or attacks, each opponent discards a card, and then each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card this way loses 3 life. So basically, if they discard a land, they lose 3 life. If they don't have anything to discard, they still lose 3 life.
So it's almost like Blightning on a stick, right?
Yeah, so it's not... I mean, if they have a non-land that they're willing to discard, then you only get the discard part of it. You don't get the damage too. But by the time you're doing it a couple times, usually they're running out of resources. It definitely adds up. I think that the other thing that makes this one interesting to me is the fact that black-red is probably slightly easier colors to build a graveyard, be able to cast this escape cost realistically.
So where do you see this being played? What kind of decks?
So personally, I like the idea of putting it in with other cards that are going to tax your opponent's resources in the same way. So if you're playing it alongside Thoughtseize, you're playing alongside Kolaghan's Command, kind of a black-red mid-rangey deck, maybe Grixis or Jund if you can manage the mana. That to me seems interesting. I'm not sure if I want to play it in like a red-black aggressive deck, because if you're playing it early and it just dies, you might not get value out of it that way. I'd rather just play a creature that sticks around.
See, I actually like it like in a Judith deck, you know, kind of like Aristocrats sort of thing, where you're sacking a lot of creatures, putting a lot of stuff into the graveyard early, and the death trigger also triggers, how could I say, you know, if you're playing the Midnight Marauder or Judith or whatever else, you know, triggers on death, you get that trigger automatically plus either 3 damage or the discard. So that's where I would probably play it, like some kind of Mardu Aristocrats type deck.
Or yeah, Rally. Something go ahead, Jonathan.
I think they're doing similar things in Standard right now with the Nightmare Shepherd. Where, like, if you have a Nightmare Shepherd in play and you play this, you know, they discard a card, and then when it dies, it comes back as a 1/1, and they do it again. You know, that kind of stuff. And obviously, the Nightmare Shepherd's really good for, like, a Aristocrat-style deck, right? Because, you know, you sacrifice all your stuff, and then you got to do it again, because you get tokens to do it with. So,
oh, my God. I got to get that card now.
Yeah, it is worth mentioning that there is a time, you know, when this enters the battlefield and you can sacrifice it to something else before it dies to its own trigger. So if you've got a way to you know, emerge it or whatever else you want to do, you can do that before it goes to the graveyard.
Or you can even just use the cat oven situation, right?
Yeah.
If you use like an oven, you get 2 foods because the 6/6.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's very interesting. You can manipulate, or just things like, even if you think of like Kiora, the uncommon planeswalker from War of the Spark, that has seen play in some Gruul decks because of things like Bone Crusher Giant, right? When you play a Bone Crusher Giant, you draw a card because it has power more than four. Mm-hmm. And yeah. The same thing with this is with Kiora in play, if you play this, you draw
exactly
a card
what
as
I
well.
Was. Yep, that's exactly what I was testing earlier. It's
oh, were you really? Yeah. In a Grixis list? Or
in a Grixis list, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
because Kiora is a blue. You can cast her for blue, yeah. Neat.
Jeez. Broken. All right.
I'll put that list in our chat while we're looking at some more cards here. All right. Why don't you go ahead with another one here, Ryan?
Well, you guys got the best ones, so...
Get wrecked.
Well, a card that I've heard people talking about a lot, and I played against online and at the pre-release, and I absolutely hated playing against it, was Dream Trawler. Six mana, two, white, blue, flying lifelink, and when you draw a card, it gets +1/+0 to the end of turn. So basically on your turn, it's always going to be a 4/5. And then when it attacks, you draw a card. So if you attack with it, it becomes a 5/5. And then if you discard a card, you can it gains hexproof. So you can protect it after you've attacked and you don't have to have any downside. Or, you know, if it's on your turn and you need to protect it, you just discard something. In control decks, they'll have no problem protecting this, I think. You know, as far as like a good finisher, I think it's up there. I don't, maybe better than, it kind of reminds me of the, what was it? The, one of the Elder Dragons. Do you guys remember?
Ojedai.
It's the Esper one, right? The one that you discard a card, it becomes a 1/1?
Oh, Chromium.
The Elder ones, not the, the other Elder ones.
Chromium. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of Chromium, kind of.
Definitely.
Yeah, I played against this in a sealed event, a two-headed giant. The opponent had a Heliod out and then played a Dream Trawler. Mm. And it's, you just wonder, how do you get out of a situation like that?
You can't. Not in sealed.
Well, let me explain. So I played the limited all-star. It's a 6-mana ox or something that for your devotion to black... You neg X. I don't know which one it is, but
yeah,
you know what I'm talking about. Maybe
yeah.
Actually, I could find it here. I have the spoiler.
If you play sealed, I'm sure you play.
Yeah, I don't play a lot of sealed, but I had this thing, and it was able to kill the Baneslayer, whatever this thing's called, the Dream Trawler. Mm-hmm. But the person discarded a card, right? So it had hexproof. But we had a Shadow Spear on the board.
Nice.
Oh. So
everyone had Shadow Spears.
Yeah, so we took off the hexproof, and we had enough mana to just, okay, if you want to discard your hand, we can play this game. So after that happened, he goes, okay, it dies. And then my two-headed giant partner says, okay, we're going to return to nature your Heliod. Get wrecked.
Excellent.
Is that the one puts it on the bottom of the graveyard or something?
A Return to Nature is the one that just destroys it, but because their creatures
have the indestructible.
Indestructible. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was such a blowout turn. I think they were thinking they went from like, we're going to win this game, nothing can stop us, to just complete despair.
Yeah.
Thanks, Shadow Spear.
Wow. No, seriously.
You
want to
talk about Shadow Spear real quick? How do you think that card is?
I think it's super interesting. One of the things that I underestimated about that card, I thought it was the line of text that it takes off the indestructible and hexproof was just super cool. And I was thinking, oh, how many ways can I use this? But the thing that made me sad is like, well, I wouldn't really want Shadow Spear in a deck. I was just thinking, why would I want a +1/+1 and lifelink? But I forgot that it gives trample. So... Mm-hmm. Putting it on a big creature like a, what's the elf that is a 3-mana 5/4?
Steel Leaf Champion?
Yeah, putting it like on a Steel Leaf Champion, it's like coming in for 6 with trample.
Damn.
So I feel like in a deck like that, giving like big beefy creatures trample is excellent. And then you have this other ability just on the side for maybe if you need to use it for some reason.
Questing Beast is particularly disgusting as well, because mm-hmm. Death Touch Trample works well, and you get the lifelink on the secondary trigger.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's a good point.
So is Shadow Spear a sideboard card?
I think if you wanted it, deck, it needs to be a main deck card.
Like as a 4-of or a 3-of, maybe?
Because think about it, if it's a sideboard card, then you're also siding in the appropriate removal for the thing that you're trying to give give hexproof for or something. I think it's like something that's in the, if it's in the main deck, then you can sideboard in a removal spell that makes sense, or reconfigure your removal to meet some kind of need, you know.
What about
I'm trying to figure out if there's a deck that has Shadow Spear and like Assassin's Trophy, because I would love to hit the Lotus Bloom deck.
Lotus Field?
The Lotus Field deck, because you can get rid of their Lotus Fields mm-hmm. hexproof and then take it out.
I've been seeing people run Tomic, which hoses Lotus Field because they can't target their lands.
That's really funny.
That's funny. Mono White Devotion sounds good now, actually.
Yeah, because now Tomic, first of all, Mono White picked up, we'll talk about that in a minute, but picked up tons of, you know, gas, and then you got Tomic, which is two pips, and it shuts off the Lotus Field combo.
So, Shadow Spear, real quick, would this be playable in blue-red in Sol, you think?
I think so. I don't think it hurts. Trample definitely helps that deck. You know, they want to be able to give a lot of their guys Trample.
I think I've been playing in Sol deck, and that's the first place I thought about it, is maybe in here, because you have a big 5-5, like 5-5 indestructible. Mm-hmm. Why not give it Trample?
All right, well, let's move on to our next one. So I think we're back to Jonathan, your choice.
Ooh.
For multicolor.
Let's see. I think I'm going to go with Party Girl, as they call her. Galia of the Endless Dance. It's a red and a green legendary satyr with haste. Other satyrs you control get +1/+1 and have haste. Whenever you attack with three or more creatures, you may discard a card at random. If you do, draw two cards, and it's a 2/2.
Mm.
So I think, like, just a 2/2 with haste on rate is not too shabby.
Mm-hmm.
Gets in there for damage. But the second line attack, or I guess it's the third line attack, haste is the first one. The third line attacks where you get to discard and draw, that just seems nuts to me.
Yeah, it's gas.
Yeah,
literally. I definitely underestimated this card till I tried it out, and getting that attack trigger doesn't feel hard to accomplish, and it does feel really good. You know, that's real card advantage quite quickly.
Right, so and you don't have to attack with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just three creatures. So you can leave her back and just attack with three goblins from a Goblin Rabble Master or some other assortment of creatures.
So basically the second line of text here has no meaning whatsoever. You're never going to be playing this with other satyrs, most likely.
I tried it. I certainly tried it.
I saw someone try it. And they did. They went 3-1 in the local with it, with satyr.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, satyr aggro.
But maybe like with Xenagos, maybe? I'm not sure. So like in a green-red stompy deck is probably where you'll be playing this?
All right, throw another bad list into chat.
You got another satyr list? I think the list, so the MTGO results had it in a Gruul deck.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the basic Gruul deck that we've all come to know.
With like the 3/3 Riot guy, and
I have
one thing
right
I quite like is that when you might make some kind of, you know, quote unquote bad attacks with Galia to be able to get that trigger to get the discard. And that plays really well when you've got things like Embercleave, because it's like, hey, I'm attacking with these four creatures. Am I trying to Embercleave, or am I just trying to get my trigger so I can draw an extra card?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're always trying to Embercleave, right? Here's the list that played it in the MTGO results. They were really low to the ground, so they had Bomat Courier, they had Burning Tree Emissary, obviously. I think any mm-hmm. deck with this is going to be running the Burning Tree Emissary. It's and then free, they did have a satyr, the Fire Drinker satyr.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they got in there. And then Spellbreaker, obviously. Rakdos Cackler. See, you see these one-drops, it's obvious they want to get a one-drop, get Galia, and then something else. And
mm-hmm. You know, Anax also makes satyr tokens. I think that's pretty reasonable. If those get pumped and haste, it'd be scary.
Yeah.
Enix. What is Enix?
It's the red demigod. So, you know, if you, you know, and like I've said, with the red demigod, you know, you have one Enox, you play a second one, you get 4/1/1 satyrs, they become 2/2 hastes. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, we talked about him, I think, last time a little bit.
Yeah. So while I was trying out some bad red-green decks, another one that I was looking at, and I keep thinking this card's going to be really good, but it hasn't quite done it for me, is Clothis, the God of Destiny. So the one red-green legendary enchantment creature god. It's a 4/5 with indestructible, and it's not a creature unless if you have 7 devotion to red and green. And beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you exile a card from a graveyard. If it's a land, you get a mana, red or green. Otherwise, you gain 2 life, and it deals 2 life to each opponent. It's a really weird card here. You know, I haven't really seen it turned on as one thing. Even with a deck with a decent amount of red or green creatures, I've seen it mostly just kind of sit around. It's almost like one of the Planeswalkers, like the 3-mana Planeswalkers, where you can plus to add mana, or you can plus to deal 2 and gain 2. And I don't know how impactful it is. You know, draining 2 a turn is a lot, but is it enough?
So I saw this yesterday. I played at Hallelujah in town at evening event, and there was like 2 or 3 people were on the Niv-Mizzet Bring to Light deck.
Yes.
And they were playing Clothis. So it's just something you search.
So was it like a one of, or was it
many? Yeah, like a one or two of, just to get some extra mana. You
it's
know,
also another way to go from 3 mana to 5, I suppose, although you can't quite do...
Yeah, you need a have to be red Fabled Passage mana to do it.
Yeah, they were playing Fabled Passage too, I think, and they had some other stuff that could put things into the graveyard. I forgot, does Niv-Mizzet put stuff into the graveyard if you don't put it into your hand? No, it goes to the bottom.
No, I believe he bottoms them. I believe. I should double check.
That seems like it would be broken anyway. Like, if you put it in the graveyard, then maybe you just don't put any double color cards. You just use Niv-Mizzet as like a huge, like, you know what I'm saying, to dump cards in your graveyard.
Oh, yeah, it is bottom in any in a random order. That's what I assumed, but just had to make sure.
Ashlyn played this on the, are you guys familiar with the Game Nights series on YouTube?
I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah, it's a EDH, it's like EDH gameplay. It's one, some of the best, like, very well-produced EDH gameplay out there. I love the show.
Paired up with, what was it, some SCG guys?
So SCG does their own commander gameplay. This is done by the Command Zone, and Ashlyn played this as her commander. So, no spoilers, I won't say who won, but I got to watch it in action at the commander table, which, of course, this is not a commander podcast, but, you know, shout out to the...
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. All right, any other big ones that you really want to... I think there's maybe one more, but why don't you take it away, Ryan, with anything interesting you still?
I've been wanting to build Abzan for a while now, and I'm always looking at, like, Abzan cards that are possible. I mean, cards that are possible, like an Abzan Aggro or Abzan Delirium or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think there's 2 good cards in here that would fit. Right, maybe 3. So, like, one of them is Bronze Hide Lion, which is a 2-mana 3/3, and you can pay 2 mana, give it indestructible to the end of turn, and when it dies, it comes back as a enchantment that you put on any creature that's in play, and it gains that same ability. And then the other one that I'm kind of excited about is Kunoros, the Hound of Atheros, which is 1 white and black. And it has Vigilance, Menace, and Lifelink, and creature cards in graveyards can't enter the battlefield, and players can't cast spells from graveyards. So this shuts down Escape, right?
Right.
This also shuts down Dredge.
Right.
Very much so.
Which makes me dislike it very much.
And it's got Menace, so it's hard to block, so it's a good kind of aggressive card in like an Abzan aggro deck. And then it's Vigilance, so it, you know, doesn't tap, so it's a good, great blocker. It's good against, you know, the mono-red aggro decks and whatnot. And it's got Lifelink, again, also good against aggro decks. So between
it
that...
It's for a lot of damage, certainly.
Yeah, between that and the Bronze Hide Lion, I'm kind of excited about the possibilities of Abzan. I don't know if it's going to be good, but I think they're good Abzan cards.
I agree. My buddy who runs he runs Abzan Aggro in Pioneer, that's his deck, and he said, my buddy Brandon, he said that this is going to go in his sideboard over Grafdigger's Cage. Mm-hmm. So he's going to start trying out the hounds in there, and he's replacing the Fleecebane Lions with Bronzehide Lion.
Are they better? See, that's what I was going to ask you guys. It's easier.
He thinks so. he doesn't want to waste his whole turn to make it indestructible, essentially, yeah. is what he told me.
So better than an aggressive deck.
That's what he said. But, I haven't played the deck. I trust his judgment. He's a pretty smart guy. He's mm-hmm. pretty good at Magic, too. So, yeah, I think he's trying to get foil Bronzehide Lions. So I think it's uh-huh. probably pretty good in that deck.
Yeah, it's an interesting decision. And, you know, there's also Voice of Resurgence, I think, to consider at the same mana cost.
What was the other one?
Voice of Resurgence.
Yeah. Yeah, so hard. There's so many good two drops. You know, and also Scavenging Ooze, right?
Bronzehide Lion, for me, definitely gets the best design win. You know, flavor win. It's a callback to Fleece Mane Lion. It's a callback to, you know, kind of the bestow mechanic. And it's also just got the great, the story is definitely referencing Hercules and the lion. You know, he kills an indestructible lion and then gets a cloak that makes him indestructible.
Nice. So were there any others that you guys wanted to talk about? I think there's a few more I wanted to talk about if you didn't want to.
I think that Pelucranos might find a little home here or there. So that's the new Pelucranos. It's 4 mana for a 0/0 that comes in with 6 +1/+1 counters. And it can pay 1 green black, doesn't even tap, and it fights another creature. But whenever damage is dealt to it, well, it has a +1 counter on it, you prevent that and remove that many counters instead. So it's almost more like a, what is it, like the Manticores from the old days, where you can use the counters to fight things down.
Mm-hmm. Or like the Spitting Hydras. You remember that? Was that 4th edition?
I don't.
It's like a red, it's like awesome, X though. red or something. Yeah.
Oh, I know what you're talking about now, yeah.
Maybe it's
I thought about using this in black-green food. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm running 2 Wicket Wolves. And yeah. I thought maybe replace a Wicket Wolf with one of these.
Hmm.
But I wasn't sure because I heard some people talking about it on a podcast. I think it was Jerry Thompson and Brian Gottlieb. And they were saying how you don't want this in a deck that's going to go long.
Mm-hmm.
And the food deck, the black-green food deck, is more of a grindy mid-range deck. And so I'm kind of torn because I'm looking for tools to fight against the mono-green ramp deck, the mm-hmm. one that goes to Ulamog and
Ugin and stuff.
And Ugin and stuff. And one of the things that I lack against that deck is pressure. It's hard to get the pressure against the deck. Really, all you need is pressure, a couple of Thought Seizes, and a Murderous Rider. And I think you can get there against that deck. Because you pressure them, you Thought Seize one of their payoffs until they draw another one. You kill that payoff with a Murderous Rider and then finish them off. But it seems like I can't put the pressure together, and maybe this is a way to do it.
So I was going to say my other possible use for Pelucranos. So he comes with all of these counters. There's got to be some way to kind of like move these counters off of him onto other creatures. I'm pretty sure there's something that does that.
I see what you're saying.
You know, so removing creature, or sorry, removing tokens and just kind of like spreading it around, or even like in a hardened scales deck is like more of a top end. You know, you're getting these extra counters when he comes into play.
So it'll be like a 7/7 instead of a 6/6?
Or an 8/8. Because, you know, you've hardened skills, and then you
why
have...
not? And then you put a Shadow Spear on it and just go to town.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm down.
So yeah, Pelucranos, I like it. It's got to have some place in some deck in the future. Can I talk about like a combination of cards?
All right.
Just kind of go over a couple all at once. So
yeah,
we talked about this before. I thought cards like, or not cards, decks like Enchantress or Boggles is going to get better. And there's like 2 or 3 cards, I think, in multicolor that kind of help out the strategy. One of them is Siona, Captain of the Pylias.
Mm-hmm.
She's 1 white and a green, and she's a 2/2. And when she comes into play, you can look at the top 7 cards of your library. And then if you have any auras, you can put them into your hand. Sorry, you can reveal an aura, so it's just 1. And then the rest go on the bottom in any order. And whenever you put an aura on a card, you get to create a 1/1 human soldier token. So she doesn't have protection, which is bad, but she's basically... It's kind of like a collected company for auras. You know, you grab one, put it in your hand, and then you can play it. Like, I would play this more than I would play, I think, the Heliod, the Pilgrim of Heliod. And then the other card...
What does the Pilgrim do, just so I have a context?
Cause
I
it's don't... a 1/2/3 mana. They got reprinted as well. And you can search for any aura card and put it into your hand.
Okay.
But I just like the value. You get the creature here. It's a bigger creature as well. And you get to dig a lot as well. If you're playing an aura deck, you're gonna have a lot of auras in there anyways.
Right, right. I see what you're saying. Because you'd rather have the 1/1s.
Yeah.
The value of the 1/1s.
Is Rancor is legal, right?
It is no? not, no. Oh, we would definitely be playing Rancor if it was legal.
Too bad. So another card that goes along with this is Staggering Insight, which I thought was also maybe a playable Boggles card. So it's a 2-mana aura, 1 white, 1 blue, and a creature gets +1/+1 in lifelink, and whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. So in Boggles, you're going to be playing the Unflinching Courage, I think, the +2/+2 lifelink and trample. And you're going to have a lot of other abilities that kind of push damage through, so I think this would be like a nice little addition to the package, the aura package.
Is the Boggles deck Bant, or is it green, white?
I think it's Bant. You could do Bant, though. It's probably green, white, now.
It's like, because the thing is the more colors you get into in Pioneer, the more kind of, things, you know.
Because blue gives you, like, the unblockable, creature can't be blocked, enchantment and stuff like that, so.
Plus, you could just run Uro. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Was there anything else you guys wanted to talk about? Because I got some jank I don't mind talking about.
We don't have to talk about all the janks. We do still want to talk about, you know, initial impact. Maybe I would talk about Ashiok. You know, it was one of my favorite cards back in the original Theros. And just, you know, it's a Planeswalker. It deserves a mention. The 5-mana Planeswalker. It can make a 2/3 black nightmare creature that mills the opponent for 2 when it attacks into exile. That says a +1, which is kind of cool. Again, -3 to bounce a permanent and then make them exile a card from their hand, which if they're empty-handed means that it just exiles stuff. And then it can -7 to cast 3 face-up cards from your opponent's exile.
So I do want to say that it's kind of rare for non-white kind of control-ish cards to have an ability that creates creatures.
Yeah. Some of the mono black ones, I guess, you know, like zombies, but that's, I definitely agree.
So, you know, Ashiok, I mean, this could even be good in, I don't know, like, I was going to say like a Scarab God or like a Grixis type deck, maybe.
Yeah, well, it competes with the Scarab God, which is one strike against it, in my opinion.
Well, see, if you use the -7... all those cards you exiled from your opponent's graveyard, you can get back at least.
Right, or all the cards they exiled with their escape mechanic or whatever else they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys want to talk about the other big artifact real quick before we go to our top 5?
Is this the Nyx Lotus? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Because I think we talked about...
I was a little interested for it in Standard, but not super... so it's 4-mana legendary artifact that enters tapped, and you can tap it to add mana to equal to the devotion of any color.
Yeah, people were making ridiculous amounts of mana with this, right?
They were.
In Lotus combo, right?
I think that it was alongside the guy who triples mana, but maybe.
Yeah. They made something like 900-something mana, I think, with it.
Yeah, I saw the 1,000 mana Hydroid Crisis, but that was on Arena. That was in Standard.
Yeah.
That was in Standard with the tripler. And it's dumb. It's so dumb that the tripler is dumb.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dumb card.
And you were talking about that last time, Jonathan. You were psyched about that.
Oh, I am still psyched. I think it's a dumb card. I actually replaced the Vorinclex in my Commander battle box with the tripler because it feels so much better because people hate Vorinclex. So
yeah,
you know, I gave him a little break.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So Nyx Lotus, I think, could see some play. Probably green would want to play this. I'm guessing like in a green devotion deck, not a green ramp deck.
I kind of disagree that green would be the one to play it. It feels like green can have access to
How about red
crazy deck? Mana. Any kind of like, yeah, any kind of deck that can't ramp, like, because green's got ramp kind of covered.
Yeah.
But decks that can't, like, black or red, I could see this being a boon to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys want to talk about the Labyrinth as well, or...
I'm excited. I just don't have a spot for it yet. It's the one land that might be some more played. It's a untapped land that taps for colorless mana, or you can pay 4 and tap it to remove an attacking or blocking creature from combat.
Now, wasn't there a similar Ixalan card, though, that like searches for a land, and then if you have like 5 or 6 land in play, it flips, and then it's basically like a Maze of Ith?
Compass, I want to say. It was a card that I always loved, but everyone else is like, but Treasure Map is way better. And I was like, but it could be a thing, and then it never was a thing.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine was talking about putting this in his mono green ramp deck. I don't know what that was about. I don't think there's no, as far as I can remember, in mono green there's no ETB stuff that it matters. Like, there's Elvish Rejuvenator and stuff like that, but most of the Eldrazi are cast triggers. So
yeah,
because one of the things I would think to do with it is blink your own creature, right?
What are we talking about? Oh, but it isn't blink though?
It doesn't blink. It just removes it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I'm not hyped on this. I thought it was blink.
I mean, for 5 mana, you can stop an attacker every turn. You can even, do it with blockers, which is kind of different. You know, that's an improvement over Maze of Ith. But yeah, it's still a lot big.
Does nothing against Ulamog. You're still going to mill 20.
I'm down on it.
All right, why don't we get to the fun part here, where we kind of talk about, we've gotten a bit of first impression. We've gone through a lot of the cards we like in every color. Can we narrow down maybe a top 5 apiece?
Yeah, I think we can.
We're just all going to do our top 5s and then all do our top 4s. And
yeah. Are we doing any honorable mentions here?
Yeah, you can do that. Do you want to do that before or after our top 5?
Maybe before. Okay, I just have one. I don't remember if you guys actually touched on it when we were going over red, because I feel like it's just this sleeper card that might one day really find a good home. Mm-hmm. Was the Tectonic Giant.
Yeah, we didn't know about that one. You want to talk about it real quick?
I mean, it's a 3/4, and it doesn't do anything right away in theory, so maybe that's bad on paper, but on attack or whenever an opponent targets it with a spell, you get to either deal them 3 damage or look at the top 2, and you exile the top 2 and you can cast one of them until the end of your next turn. So it's rare that they can kill this without you not only getting a card out of it, but card selection almost.
Mm-hmm.
That's just really powerful to me. And if you can ever get it, to attack it 1 or 2 times, it really runs away with the game. So I feel like this is a sleeper. It'll find a home somewhere, maybe eventually. One day, it'll just be me. I'll be the one playing it. That's still enough for me.
Maybe Chunky Red?
Something like Chunky Red, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any honorable mentions, Jonathan, that you wanted to talk about?
It's tough because, I feel like if we do a top 5 and then I give an honorable mention, it feels like it's number 6, you know? And I don't really, I think my top 5, I'm not sure I would put anything close to number 6.
I guess
I'm going to cheat a little bit here. So I did a top 5, and I'll say honorable mention to Thassa's Oracle, which has already done a lot of work in Pioneer just in the short time we've seen the results. So we've seen it in Breach Combo, we've seen it in Mono Blue Devotion, and also in Kethis Combo, replacing Jace, which for me was interesting because now they're running Sorin instead of Jace, and Sorin brings back the Thassa's Oracle from the graveyard.
Interesting.
Winning the game. And I don't know what the purpose of that is. I guess you get more play out of Sorin because you can bring back other creatures. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not something I've tried yet. I guess you could, Sorin and minus, and you minus 3 with Sorin, which I feel like is the kind of the key point with Sorin. I always like to have 3 drops because you can then minus and keep them around
right.
and play. So that grabs your combo.
Right, what it grabs, it can grab things like another Diligent Excavator, or it can grab your Kethis or whatever. But in the end game, when you play it from the graveyard, because you're going to probably play the Sorin from the graveyard, then you get Thassa's Oracle when you have no cards or 2 cards or 1 card left in your deck, and you win the game.
I'm going to have to try that. That's interesting, because I've been playing the deck and I haven't played that.
Yeah, the Kethis combo, like we were talking about, it's got because little slots like the Thassa's Oracle or one Heliod and one Walking Ballista now,
Yeah.
You can just add those to the combo deck because you can play it all from the graveyard, which is insane. Anyways, that would be my honorable mention, Thassa's Oracle.
All right, and my honorable mention would be Nylea, Keen-Eyed. I'm still kind of interested in this card, 5/6. We talked about it a little bit last time. It has that similar ability to the Duskwatch Recruiter when he flips. Makes everything like one mana cheaper.
Yeah.
So I could really see this like in a green-red stompy type deck, maybe with some really good value, you know, 4 or 5 drops. And the fact that, you know, you can use your mana, you know, to reveal a card and then keep getting creature cards. Like, if you're playing this with a, you know, Courser of Kruphix, basically it's like, you know, put your land into play and then draw that card. Put your land into play and then draw that creature card. So, I'm kind of excited about
Nylea. It helps you to dig, for sure, yeah.
So, top 5. Drum roll.
All right.
At number 5.
So I went with Shatter the Sky as my number 5. Kind of just a role player, but it's the first really castable 4-mana Wrath that we've got, other than, you know, in white. It's the first white castable 4-mana Wrath. You know, it's not white-blue, it's not black, it's not white-white, black-black. Just a nice white removal spell, and might have some synergies with things.
Yeah, I like it. Probably better than Settle. You know, I don't know if I would have had it on my list, but I still think it's a decent card.
I really like its synergy with Gideon Blackblade, because you can Wrath and then draw a card.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Or any of the Gideons. You could do 3 mana Gideon, the Gideon of the Trials.
Yeah, but Gideon, Blackblade's always a creature on your turn. It's always a 4 power, right? 4/4, so you don't even have to activate it or anything. You just, and it's indestructible, so.
Just do like, oops, all Gideons with Shatter the Sky.
Got there.
Okay. My number 5 was Dream Trawler. Like I said, I think it's a really good control card, or like, you know, kind of like a mid-range, maybe something that would fit with Ojutai or something, like in a big mid-range Flyers deck. So that was my number 5.
My number 5 was one of the cards I got excited about when I saw Spoiled. Soul Guide Lantern. This is
right.
Yeah, this is a graveyard hate card. It's funny because obviously I like graveyard decks, but this does not nuke your graveyard, which means that I can board it in my graveyard deck against other graveyard decks. So
better than the Relic from, what was it, Shards?
No, it is not better than Relic, and the reason why is because you don't draw a card and exile the graveyard. It's draw a card or exile. So, so it may or may not be better. It depends on whether you value the card or your graveyard. So, the other thing about it, I'll read it so that you see the whole card. Soul Guide Lantern, it's 1 mana. It's an artifact. When Soul Guide Lantern enters the battlefield, exile target card from your graveyard. Or from a graveyard, sorry. Mm-hmm. So you get a card when it's coming in. You can tap it to sacrifice it and exile each opponent's graveyard. Or you can pay 1, sack it, and cycle it. So I like it. I think it's very, very needed piece of graveyard hate.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'll fit a slightly different niche than what we had previously.
And we have a lot of Pioneer decks coming from the graveyard. We have the Breach deck now. We had Dredgeless Dredge. We have things like
Kethis Combo.
Kethis Combo. Got to get it in there. And then Phoenix, which has kind of been forgotten, but is a real deck in Pioneer.
Yeah, it really is. Definitely.
The Blue-Red, you mean?
Yeah, Blue Red Phoenix with you know, Young Pyromancer and the Phoenix.
The Phoenix? What's the multiple Phoenix? Is it Phoenixes?
Phoenix Eyes?
All right, so number 4. Who wants to go first?
We'll keep in the same order we were just going in. So okay. I went with Woe Strider. We talked about it on our last show. It'll be just a slight upgrade for any of those decks that are looking for some kind of effect where they're sacrificing creatures, putting things in the graveyard. It's nice for that.
Which one?
I like Woe Strider a lot. I think it's
the 3/2 that can sack another creature for free. And
the one that brings the goat.
And it brings goat.
Goat.
Or it maybe the goat brings it. I think that's kind of the flavor, is that it's following the goat, maybe.
So it chases the goat around?
That's what I'm hoping.
That's why the goat's so scared in that picture.
Oh, yeah. The goat is going to meet a terrible end.
Yes. It's going to be eaten by the Woe Strider. Yeah, my number four, you guys will hate me for this, is Underworld Breach. I think it's a great card.
Why do we hate you? Why are we going to hate you
for that? But I'm saying, I would figure you guys would like rate it higher. I think it's a great card, but just like that, the mana that you have to pay to, you know, escape everything. Because you only get it on one turn, then you have to exile it. So you're going to have a crap ton of mana and a crap ton of cards in your graveyard. So this is going to be like either hurry up and fill up everything, but then how do you get the mana? Or it's going to be a late game card, you know, that you cast and you have everything. You can do it then, but then is it too late? So...
Have it's you seen the deck with this?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Can I spoil it for you? Can I blow your mind? Okay. So the way they're doing it is with an enchantment called Chronic Flooding.
Yeah.
And it says whenever... you probably know that from the jank train. so whenever a land is tapped, you mill three cards.
Uh-huh. And whenever the enchanted land. It's like a one and a blue to enchant a land.
Right. So you enchant a land with Chronic Flooding, and then you use... Hidden Strings to untap the lands. So you play a Hidden Strings, you untap both lands, you tap them both for mana, and then they mill, or one land mills you.
You mill three, then you
cast Hidden Strings again, exiling the cards you milled with the Underworld Breach. And you do that over and over and over again.
Wow.
Right.
I can't even wrap my mind around that right now. I have to see it in action.
I think it might fit in a couple of maybe not fairer situations, but maybe like a one or two of in like a Jeskai Ascendancy or a Phoenix deck that has the resources to use it.
Yeah, I could see that.
If you can get two cards off of it for two mana, that's a big boon.
Especially
Then you know how it wins?
How does it win?
So you mill your whole deck, right?
Yeah.
And then you play Thassa's Oracle.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah. No, I like that idea, though, in Jeskai Ascendancy. You know, you're making all this mana anyways, and if they counter one of your key spells, you can just bring it back with Underworld Breach, and then you have all that mana. You just cast it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cast that, what was it? Sylvan's Awakening again. Boom.
Get him.
Yeah. All right, so who's next for number four? Is it Jonathan?
Is that me?
Yeah,
I don't think you'd given your four yet.
All right, I picked another card that is not really seeing play right now, but that I like a lot. Ox of Agonis.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time.
Yeah, I got a crush on this card. I know it's going to be great in modern Dredge, for sure, because you get to use the Dredge mechanic, so when you draw three cards, you dredge your Stinkweed Imps and go nuts. There's not anything like that in Pioneer right now, but I can see this as something in maybe the Blue-Red Phoenix deck where you do something like a Lightning Axe and discard it. I don't think it's something you're going to really play from the front end where you're trying to pay five mana and discard your hand and draw three, but more like something in the Phoenix deck that has that has traditionally had a lot of air in it. This can be both gas and a threat.
All right, so now moving on to number three.
Back to Kevin. Yeah, so I'll do my three. I had Heliod for number three. So this is definitely something I'd wanted to convince or talk about last week, although we didn't quite get to it, is that like people were really hyped about Heliod, saying it's going to be the most impactful card because people see that combo with Ballista and assume it's going to be the number one thing. I know it'll be a deck. I don't think it's that crazy. I'm not willing to put this as my most impactful card for the set. So I'm putting it at number three. I think that's a comfortable place. We know it'll see play. It's already seeing play, but that's as high as I'm going to put it.
So I also had it as my number three. And I think, Jonathan, you said people are playing it in Standard already in like Mono White Devotion with like a Soul Sisters type deck.
It's actually seen a lot of play in Pioneer already. There's many, many decks in the deck dump that utilize Heliod and the Walking Ballista combo from all different types, from aggro to mid-range to strictly combo builds. And I'll talk more about that later on in my list. No spoilers.
Yeah. I like it in the Soul Sisters type deck that people are playing right now. I think you just keep gaining life with Daxos. Whenever you play a creature, whenever a creature dies, you gain life. And you just keep putting that on all your creatures.
Yeah.
Okay, so next. So third, Jonathan, what's yours?
Mine's fast. It was Underworld Breach.
Okay.
So we just talked about and that. Going right into that, I had Underworld Breach at my number two. So okay. Right back to you, Ryan.
Is it back to me?
Yep.
All right, so my number two is Kroxa. I just love these big Timmy type cards. It's huge. It's got a nice ETB effect. And if you're playing an aggro deck, it's going to be easy to get back into play. I think everyone's kind of focused on, you know, the other Titan right now, but I think Kroxa's got a lot of potential, and that'll kind of come out in the, you know, the next few months or the next few weeks.
I could see the similar kind of play pattern with Kroxa as I was talking about with the Ox of Agonis, where mm-hmm. you use something like a Lightning Axe as a removal spell in an aggro deck. So mm-hmm. one drop, two drop, three drop, or two drop and Lightning Axe, and mm-hmm. then later you bring back the Titan. Mm-hmm. So not even something you're really playing on curve on the front end, because in an aggro deck, you don't really want to play this on curve at two. On two, you want some kind of creature that's going to aggressively put some pressure. But this is something that maybe after they Wrath, you bring this Titan out.
Yeah, yeah.
From the graveyard or something, something like that.
Okay, so number two you said was Breach, right, Kevin? So back to Jonathan then for your number two?
My number two is Uro.
Okay.
That card, when I saw it, when I saw it previewed, I just said, this is stupid. This is, this card is dumb. It's just too much. It's extra. It's like getting a double chocolate cake and they put it on top of a brownie or something. It's just too much. I mean, I feel like it's got to, I don't have to be galaxy brain to figure out that it's going to see play in multiple decks and
multiple formats.
Yeah, multiple formats. And I don't know. I mean, obviously to me. And
so what's keeping you from putting it higher, number one on your list?
Because I think that the Heliod combo is really what keeps it from that. So, like, Heliod on its face, I don't think is as strong as Uro, not a chance, but its interaction with Walking Ballista puts it in a new level of importance for the format. I think this is going to be the talking point of the format going forward right now until something happens, until the metagame adjusts. Or, you know, let's not say it, but until we start talking about cards maybe finding greener pastures.
Fair enough. Okay, yeah. I think that's fair. So obviously then number one for you is Heliod. So my number one is Uro.
Mine was two.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so yeah, you both had Uro at number one, and I put Heliod number one because of... it is colored by the results. So when I reviewed all the results from the deck dumps, and seeing how many different decks this Heliod combo was in was just surprising to me. There are a lot of ways to find the combo. So one of the ways that I was most impressed with was Board the Weatherlight is a way to find each side of the combo, because Heliod is historic because it's legendary, and then Walking Ballista is historic because it's artifact. And in the same vein, they had the Owl, Arcanist Owl. So, like, the mid-range...
Yeah, that's one I'd seen early on was really cool.
Right. The mid-range deck runs the Arcanist Owl, which turns on the Heliod for attacking just by having just one card. It also finds combo pieces. And then, like you were talking about, with the aggro Soul Sister deck, there was some builds like that where... They're just using the one mana lifelinker. I don't remember the name.
The bird.
It's the one that protects enchantments.
Yeah, the Eidolon. Yeah.
Yeah, it might be a bird, but it's not it doesn't have flying.
Yeah.
If it had flying, that card would be like 200% better.
The Alseed of Life's Bounty.
Alseed of Life's Bounty. So there were builds like that. There were builds that had the mid-range stuff going on. There were combo builds, like I said, which were just strictly, you know, Board the Weatherlight or whatever. And also, it was in the Kethis combo deck. You see different, just lots of iterations of it. And every time I seen Heliod, there were 3 to 4 Walking Ballistas right next to it. So, except for in the Kethis deck, obviously, there was 1 and 1.
God, I'm so excited to play now. I'm so excited to brew. Jeez. After talking to you guys, I'm going to make like 3 more decks, probably.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap up our show here. We're already reaching close to an hour, which is, I think, a little longer than we meant to go after how long last week went. So, we're going to wrap up our show here. We really enjoyed this. You know, I always love talking about new cards. It's my most exciting time to be brewing, to be trying to make some early calls so you look like a genius after something looks good. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that happened very much. But thank you so much for joining us, Jonathan. If you guys want to hear anything more from Jonathan, we'll give his information in a second. If you want to hear from me and Ryan, you're on our podcast, so you're hearing. No, so the best way to reach us is at MTG Pioneer on Twitter. That's where I'm usually handling it. You can find us on our Reddit, which is also MTG Pioneer, and there is a Discord associated with that. So great way to reach us there.
And for me, you can find me on Twitter at YoSchwenky, which is YoSchwenky. And you can also find me on my website, www.thejapanhobbyist.com.
All right, now, Jonathan, here's your chance to sell yourself. Any cool things you've got going on, anything new in your life, as well as good ways to contact you and hear more from you.
All right. So selling myself, that's kind of difficult. But what I will say is that you can find me on Twitter at Medina, M-E-D-I-N-A underscore M-T-G. And that's where I share most of my content and stuff that I'm doing. Also, I'll give my link to my Patreon, which is the same thing, Medina underscore M-T-G, and the link to my Discord to these guys to put in the show notes. Thanks for having me on. It's been awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Thanks so much. I hope you guys enjoyed listening. We are MTG Pioneer. We are the first pioneers, and we look forward to being your go-to source for pioneer information online.